This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for a family play that makes kids feel good about themselves, or a haunting stage drama examining relationships, it's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. The Radical Buffoons continue their third season with the regional premiere of Rapunzel. That's right, two words, Rapunzel, by playwright Jeremy Rashad Brown. It's a very modern take on the 19th century German fairy tale from the Grimm Collection, and it's set in New Orleans. Artistic director John Green is here with Jeremy Rashad Brown. Welcome.
Hi, Diane.
Hello.
This is quite a different take on the classic Rapunzel. How are you bringing the story to 21st century youngsters, Jeremy?
Well, that's a bit of a loaded question because it's so many ways. Mainly with the black audience. When it comes to Black Boy Joy, hashtag Black Boy Joy pretty much means like black men, specifically black boys, too, how we're kind of hyper-masculinized, and when it comes to being stoic, not showing emotions, and not accepting certain emotions other than anger or, you know, just being stoic, being kind of like not a person, pretty much. And this play goes directly against that, especially with young black men who are otherwise taught not to show any emotions and be happy or be joyful and try to love people and talk to people in a certain way. So it pretty much goes against that. And so Rapunzel is kind of stuck in his room with his mom, being a single parent now after his father passed away. They moved to New Orleans. And so with him having this very bouncy, very joyful personality, he moves into this new neighborhood where these bully kids come up to him and basically making fun of him, saying that he's too happy, he's too joyful, he's too this, he's too that, and he has this really tall hair, because that's a source of his strength and his joy. It's all about him tackling that and still trying to keep himself afloat and his self-care methods. And he has this new friend. Her name is Kenzie, personifies black girl magic. They develop this friendship to where they're able to be there and support one another while he is going through his transition.
So hair does play a big role in this, as it does the original fairy tale, but they aren't golden locks being let down. This right. is an afro that's growing up.
That's right, a super high top fade. All the way to the clouds, to the gods.
So what inspired this modern twist on the old fairy tale?
Earlier here in 2019, it was mounted in Austin, Texas, where I currently live. In July of 2018, the Austin Scottish Rite Theater commissioned me to write a play. They're a children's theater. We were sitting around in the office, and it was me, Susan Gale Todd, who is the producing artistic director for the theater, and Megan Ortiz, who became a co-director of the production. And we were trying to think of ideas. And Megan said on the way over to the meeting, I don't know what it all means, but I just had something come to my mind to give to you, which would be like, what if Rapunzel was a little black boy? But I don't know what any of that means. I just wanted you to like think on that. And as soon as she said that, I was like, wow, it's so much that could be done with this, especially with what's still currently, unfortunately, going on in the news cycle about young black men pretty much being shot in the streets and being aggressively attacked. And so how that falls on single parents like my own mother, who was trying to raise a young black man in America, and what she had to go through and what she felt like she had to do to protect me. So I wanted to translate all of that into this one child-friendly play.
The character's nickname is Rap.
Yes. His nickname is Rap, who Kenzie, his new friend that you'll soon meet, gives to him. But his real name is Reginald Rapunzel III, and he is the personification of Black Boy Joy. Regardless of what he's going through, he tries to always look on the positive side of things. That's how his father was, who was also a community leader, and his grandfather was the same way. And so he comes from a lineage of that optimism and that joy and that positivity to keep on pushing on and pushing through to help people along the way while they're trying to help themselves along the way. And so his whole journey throughout this play, he lets us in on how he does his self-care methods. When it comes to that optimism and that joy and that positivity, he has different methods, like his music. And so he's a singer, a rapper. He reads from his father's book of poetry every day that gives him his inspiration. And he just kind of lets us in on how he takes care of himself throughout this journey.
And the play is written in a way that it feels familiar to everyone sitting in the audience, adults, children alike. There's opportunities for the audience members to respond and react and support and reject things that are being sort of given to them by the performers in the play, whether that's music and dance opportunities, whether that's a back and forth in conversation. For the Radical Buffoons as a company, when we produce kids' work, we attempt to ensure that our work for family audiences comes with the same level of financial backing and curatorial care as our adult shows, which is not always standard with kids' work. And we also work in highly stylized physical ways, like basis of clown work is a lot of the stuff that we do. And so with this particular show, that all funnels into the way the children are given an opportunity to be present with Rap and with Kenzie and even with the bullies who are going through their own adolescent challenges, and even with the mother, Maji, who's going through her own issues. Tori Hayward and I, the director, often talk a lot about the thing that's interesting for parents, we imagine, is to watch a parent struggling to raise a child alone, dealing with the loss of her co-parent, but also not realizing what a level of helicoptering that they're doing. There's all of these deeper issues at play about growing up, both as an adult growing up with a child and as a child growing up with other children and adults, but it's handled in a way that allows the audiences to remain as exuberant as the characters they see. It's not attempting to overly moralize or direct, but rather invite children to sing and dance and be their biggest, boldest selves, because they see that in the characters on stage, and it inspires them to remain that way.
Can you share something from the show?
Sure. I actually will share the poem that Rap's dad wrote to Maji when she found out that she was having difficulty having a child. Maji, my star is in the sky. You brighten the world with your diamond eyes. A song so sweet is your voice to my ears. I dare not dream of the day you're not here. A child so joyful that we will give life. He'll brighten the world in its darkest night. A soul so pure his skin will adorn. He'll bring healing to all who are scorned. A crown so unique he shall possess. It will reach toward the sky that the world can attest.
Oh, that's beautiful. Mm.
Thank you.
What will be the takeaway for audiences after they experience this unique performance?
There's a lot of possible takeaways. The thing that we've been hearing a lot from audiences that have come so far lately is they are really attaching themselves to the design work and to the costume. Like, they're flowing with this show because of the way it's been designed. Aside from the acting and the storytelling, it feels and looks like a little bit of Hey Arnold, a little bit of Rugrats. It's like bright and large. Like, Rap as a character has a large afro. Each of our characters have different color patterns.
He looks a little bit like the guy from Kid and Play.
Yes. And if you of that era that remembers Kid and Play, you'll definitely see our little nod to that moment in our poster. His look is blue. It's all levels of blue. And so, like, his amazing wig that was made by Aya Designs Global has this lovely top that's like blue frosted. There is just something so familiar about it being a cartoon and yet it being so big and live on stage and right up near everyone. It's very hard to not get sucked into a sense of joy. And I think for me, as a producer who's just gotten to watch this show, what I think people are walking away with is a reminder that it's absolutely, positively okay and wonderful to be joyful. And I imagine that's part of the universal comment I think you wanted to make with the play.
Absolutely. And the thing is that, especially like for young men, to walk away and be like, oh, it is okay if I, you know, laugh a little bit too loudly or a little bit too long at a joke, or if I'm just laughing to myself and if I'm enjoying who I am and being who I am, that's okay, because we're all unique. We're all special.
What does Rap say at one point at the end of the play? One of the bullies is picking on him and telling him to be normal. And he says, normal is boring. And that's it. That's exactly right. We're all weird. Human beings are strange animals. And those of us that have the confidence and the comfort and the support and the village that allows us to be our wonderful, weirdest selves have an ability to find depth in our happiness and depth in our personhood. And so I would think that that's one of the things that people are going to walk away with the most is a sense of self-acceptance about their wonderful weirdness.
Absolutely. Because there's a couple of times he's even called an alien in the play. And he doesn't know how to take that. But you know what? At the end of the day, if you're an alien, you're an alien. Be proud of your alien self.
The freedom to be me.
The freedom to be me.
Artistic director John Green and playwright Jeremy Rashad Brown. This has been fun.
Thank you, Diane.
Thank you.
Performances of Rapunzel run through December 29th at Southern Rep Theater's Sanctuary Stage, 2541 Bayou Road. More info is online at radicalbuffoons.com. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. Actress Miley Zox debuts with New Orleans veteran actresses Janet Shea and Troy Bechet in a haunting drama as the Boberg Theater Company presents the New Orleans premiere of Annie Baker's award-winning play, John. It's a story examining relationships set in an old bed and breakfast in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. Actress Miley Zox is here with director Xavier Juarez. Welcome.
Hi, hello.
Thank you so much.
Let's begin with you, Xavier. Tell us about this young theater company and the new black box space in the Arts District.
So Boberg Theater is tucked in the CBD on Gravier Street. In front of it, there is a coffee shop as well as a bar. And then if you follow all the way down to the courtyard, there is a small black box theater that can sit about 45 to 60 people. So it's a very intimate space. Boberg Theater has been a small theater company that did stuff for InFringe in 2014. And last year, they did Annie Baker's The Aliens. And that's where I was introduced to Boberg Theater.
So this is going to be the second work by Annie Baker.
Yes.
So tell us about this work, John. What attracted you to it?
Annie Baker's writing is usually based in like hyper-realism. And for some reason, when I read this play, all of the characters were bold and very, very kind of hilarious in their own type of like sad way. And I found that this play, different from our other plays like The Flick or The Aliens, was mysterious. There was a looming sense of some higher sort of message in the story.
The title, what does it reference?
Just to put it simply, there's a line that says, "Everybody knows someone named John." And I think in a way, it's a character that everyone can relate to, that they've had this person in their life who has affected them deeply.
Now, I understand it's both eerie and humorous.
Correct, yes.
It takes place just after Thanksgiving. What is the playwright exploring, Miley?
Just talking about humanity. The characters are so realistic and so dynamic. And at the same time, there's a looming sense of mysticism. You feel like you really know these people, you know?
So what's the storyline?
It takes place in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, where Jenny and Elias are driving home from Ohio to go back to New York, and they make a sort of pit stop in Gettysburg off of Elias's childhood fascination with the war. The innkeeper, Murtis, is played by Troy Bechet, and she's this sort of optimistic, easy-caring woman who just takes so much pride into her bed and breakfast. She's more rural than the sort of New York city kind of characters, and at the same time she's just trying to accommodate them and be extremely like caring to them as they are sort of falling apart in the space. There is a sense that all characters are sort of longing for connection and lonely in this way, and they're really just taking the time to really get out there and connect with each other while also finding themselves isolated in this world.
Miley, you play Jenny, one half of the couple.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Tell us about your character and what attracted you to the role.
Jenny is definitely one of the most interesting and most dynamic characters I have ever played. She is kind of like a stereotypical New Yorker in some ways, but as the play moves on, she reveals a kind of OCD. She's really obsessed with objects and what they're feeling and thinking. She has a few other obsessions. I don't want to give it away. She wants to have the most amazing relationship with Elias, but she can't quite face her own demons. And at the same time, within the couple, there's a sort of psychological warfare of each just trying to get what they want, not always in the best way. For me, it's such an incredible joy to play this character because she has such a huge range and goes through so many trials. Ultimately, Jenny faces many of the issues that a lot of young women face today with a deep longing to connect, I think especially like in the social media age.
And she's connecting with both animate and inanimate objects.
Yes.
Is that where the eeriness comes in, as these inanimate objects are watching this story unfold?
Yes. The play is set in this sort of creepy Airbnb, and there's a lot of tiny little things all around, which gives anyone anxiety, in my opinion. But Jenny is just really preoccupied with sort of how everything feels. And she's especially preoccupied with one particular doll in the space named Samantha.
And the setting, Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. What's the significance to the play?
It's kind of considered a very like ghost haunted space. The character Murtis, who is played by Troy Bechet, is sort of there as like a transplant. She's been wandering over, but she's landed in this one place and this one home that used to be a hospital for Union soldiers. And in her own sort of optimism, can look past the sort of gory details of it. And I think that's kind of like part of her character. She's always working past these intense, graphic, and violent things, and she can still sort of find this light in this world.
So this old Civil War era hospital is now a bed and breakfast?
Yes, correct. With a lot of mysterious things that happen to the house. You know, Murtis' character talks about doors not being there, doors being locked, rooms being temperamental. She is in control of it and has sort of this understanding of how this house works, even if it's not working with the other guest of the bed and breakfast.
Now, that's Troy Bechet's character.
Correct, yeah.
And which character does Janet Shea play?
She plays Genevieve, which is Troy Bechet's best friend. She's blind and she's a lot older. And they have this sort of connection and relationship that when watching it, you can see that they have been friends and deep, deep confidants for a while. Murtis' character has this sort of empathy for this character who really is somewhat lost at times. They both experience hardships in their past life, and now they're together sort of healing with one another.
This is a scene from the second act. Jenny is cheerfully drinking some Pinot Grigio with Murtis and Genevieve, and she's a little bit drunk.
Do you ever feel watched, Jenny?
Watched?
Like someone is watching you, watching over you.
I don't think so. I guess I'm not sure what you...
What about when you were a child?
Not by my parents? By, like, God?
Not your parents. Just a watcher. A greater, larger presence. Watching you from somewhere.
I don't think so. I mean, I guess I'm always thinking about how other people see me. Like, I'm picturing how I look to them. And I'm always worried about, objects and what they're thinking. I'm always worried they're unhappy. Elias thinks I have OCD.
What kind of objects?
Well, all of them, I guess. But when I was little, I was always worried about my dolls. I had this one doll, Samantha, and I always felt like she was incredibly angry at me.
Wow. So it's a little spooky. It's a little funny. It's a very human story.
Yeah.
We're talking about relationships. We're talking about loneliness. We're talking about communication. And I guess a question of whether these inanimate objects actually have a soul or a spirit.
Yeah. And actually, interesting enough, the character Genevieve gives a monologue about sort of being able to see and taste objects like they have souls. And she also speaks that there's this like possession within these objects, that they hold something. And I think it also even relates to a metaphor about these three women who are all talking about objects and things like that and dolls. There's a conversation that happens where she talks about not wanting to be a doll. She thinks it would be terrifying to be put in a dress, manhandled, and have an expression on your face. And I think Annie Baker's sort of relating this to this idea of like women being objects and how they want to be free and like just not sort of like frozen in a way.
Tell us a little bit about the Pulitzer Prize winning playwright, Annie Baker.
She is quite young and became very famous from her one show that was on Broadway, I believe, called The Flick. She creates these plays that are incredibly real, almost cinematic, with heavy emphasis on the characters. I believe she's currently teaching in Austin at UT and definitely one of my favorite playwrights.
Now tell us more about yourself. This is going to be your New Orleans debut?
Yes, more or less. I've performed a few times on the stage in New Orleans. This is definitely the biggest role that I've ever had. I have a bachelor's from Bennington College in Vermont. I've mostly been doing like little commercials and film stuff. But it's such a great joy to return to the stage, you know, since college, especially with this amazing kooky character. So, yeah.
What is the conversation you hope this play will start among theater goers?
I think there's a lot of new and fresh contemporary voices. I like to think that people could discover more about Annie Baker in relation to what kind of plays are happening in New Orleans.
And I think I really hope also that people really see the amazing desire for people just trying to deeply connect beyond the surface and that kind of struggle.
Director Xavier Juarez and actress Miley Sox, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
The Boberg Theater Company presents Annie Baker's John with Miley Sox, Janet Shea, Troy Bechet, and Joe Freddo. Performances run through December 30th at the Boberg Theater, 614 Gravier Street. More info is online at beaub.org. That's our show for this week. Major support for Inside the Arts comes from the Helles Foundation. Additional support comes from Le Petit Theatre. Our program is a production of WWNO and is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette on Tuesdays at 1 p.m., Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m., and a shortened edition on Thursday mornings at 8:45 when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.